Well, we're continuing our study in Ecclesiastes, and as just an opening illustration, how many of you have ever used a book, something like this, one of the Lonely Planet series? Have you seen these, maybe, if you travel a little bit? And what will happen is you grab a book on the country or the city that you're going to see, and it'll give you a lot of help. It'll help you to know, for example, places to visit. It'll also tell you parts of town to stay away from. It'll give you ideas on what to wear. I remember going to Europe for the first time and looking up for some hints that in Europe, men dress differently than in the United States. And here's some pointers maybe on how you could dress if you wanted to maybe just be appropriate for that culture. They give you ideas on what places to see, what kind of foods to expect, what kind of things to stay away from. And I use that as an illustration tonight as we open up to Ecclesiastes chapter 1, because in many ways, to go back to our theme slide, that's what Ecclesiastes is. I am arguing that Ecclesiastes is a biblical philosophy of life, and we've had a number of introductory messages that I trust have solidified that in your mind. It is not just the thinking of one man under the sun doing the best that he can. It is God revealing truth for his people. Life is frequently hard, and God wants you to know how to make it through life. That's why we have the book of Ecclesiastes. And so I had a message last week where we focused on chapter 1, verses 1 through 11, that I called Your Brief Visit. And I want to review it just real quick. In verse 2, we had in chapter 1, the thesis. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And that word means, remember, vapor or mist. It's temporary. It's a, and it's gone. And that's true of all of life. So Solomon then asks us a question, and this is the key question, perhaps the key question in the whole book, verse 3. What advantage does man have in all his work, which he does under the sun? That's the question. The word advantage means what gain or what profit? You spend your whole life working in this world. So what's the profit? What's the benefit? What's the gain? We are so different than the earth. And that's verses 4 through 8. Verse 4, a generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. People come, people go. People are born, people die. And Solomon's making it clear that the earth is different. For example, verse 5, the sun's not that way. It rises, it sets, and it does it all again. And not only is the sun different than us, but the wind is different, verse 6, blowing towards the south, turning towards the north, whirling around. In fact, the rivers and the oceans, lakes, seas are different, verse 7. All the rivers flow into the sea. If the sea's not full, to the place where the rivers flow, there they flow again. And so verse 8, all things are wearisome. Man is not able to tell if the eye is not satisfied with seeing. We look at these things. We think about them. And we don't understand. And here we are. We're born, then we're gone. So different than the earth. So what's the verdict? Verses 9 through 10. Solomon says, here it is. There's nothing new under the sun. That which has been is that which will be. That which has been done is that which will be done. There's nothing new under the sun. See, someone might say, verse 10, it's new already. It's existed for ages. Verse 11, there's no remembrance of earlier things and also of the later things which will occur. There will be for them no remembrance among those who will come later still. You say, does that mean what I think it sounded like it meant? It does. We come, we go, and we're forgotten. And that's the application in verse 11. You say, if everything just comes and goes, and there's really nothing new, then what about me? And we're forgotten. And that's true. That's reality. And that's what Solomon wants us to understand. You say, okay, so let's think back then to that question in verse 3. Verse 3, what advantage does man have in all his work which he does under the sun? I mean, why am I even here? If it's just a and we're gone, what's the point? Solomon says, okay, many people have wondered about that. And there's one possible answer: wisdom. If we could just study everything there was to know, if we could just take high-level philosophy classes and be trained in logical thought, if we could have access to everything there is to know, and then think it through carefully, maybe we could find out the answer. And Solomon is going to help us to understand, and this is our message tonight, that that is absolutely not the case. And so the title of the message is The Vanity of Wisdom. And I'm using wisdom in the sense of wisdom, the best that we can do as we try to figure out life. We're going to be taking the rest of chapter 1, verses 12 through 18, Lord willing. And then we're going to go in chapter 2 through verses 12 through 17. Because what Solomon does is he talks about wisdom. And then in the beginning of chapter 2, he talks about pleasure. We'll cover that, Lord willing, next week. And then he gets down in chapter 2 to verse 12 and he jumps back to wisdom. So a lot of people will actually set it up like I'm doing tonight. We're talking again about the topic of the vanity of wisdom. We'll begin here with chapter 1 and verse 12. So here's Solomon, and he's dealing with this issue. Maybe if we could just think deeply, ponder philosophy, pursue knowledge, then maybe we could find out, why are we here, and what's the purpose? Well, here's what he says in chapter 1 and verse 12. I, the preacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem. Now, pause for a second. Who is Solomon, and does he have the credentials to deal with what we're talking about tonight? You know, if my little grandson comes up to me, 2 years old, right? Hey, Papa, I thought deeply about life. I think I figured things out. You know, come on. If somebody is going to be as bold, quote unquote, to say, I want to go on a journey and I want you to come with me because I want you to understand about the role of wisdom in figuring out life. My first question is, who are you? Well, Solomon tells us who he is, verse 12. He says, I, the preacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem. We know Solomon is perhaps the wisest man apart from Christ who's ever lived. We know that God blessed him with great wisdom as we've read through our Old Testaments. We know that he's the author not only of this book, but of Proverbs. And so he's a man that I'm interested in listening to, okay? If you have an opinion, okay? If you come up to me and you say, hey, Greg, I'd like to tell you what I think about a certain topic, I'm wondering, what are your credentials? Solomon has the credentials to deal with this topic. So this is what he says. I, the preacher, verse 12, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I set my mind to seek and explore by wisdom concerning all that has been done under heaven. Let's just kind of walk through that a little bit at a time. He says, I set my mind. That means he devoted himself. I am really going to focus on this and try to figure it out. He says to seek and explore. The verb to seek, it means to investigate, it means to study. And the word explore means to spy. It's the idea that I so want to find out answers to these questions that I'm going to seek, I'm going to spy, I'm going to investigate, I'm going to study, I'm going to explore. And how does he do it? Notice what he says in verse 13. By wisdom. I'm going to use logic. I'm going to use observation. I'm going to think carefully and deeply about what? Here it comes in verse 13. All the things that have been done under heaven. Now, Solomon is a guy who has access to this because he's the king. He has access to international trade routes. There are people going all around the known world at that time, and they're passing through Israel. Israel's at its zenith. And Solomon has access to all of these traders. And here he is thinking, I am going to try really, really hard, focus, setting my mind to seek and explore by wisdom concerning all of the things that have been done under heaven. And I'm going to try to figure out what the answers to life's greatest questions really are. And notice what he says in the end of verse 13. It is a grievous task which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with. That's going to be our first point this evening. You want to try to figure out life? This is the first thing that Solomon says. The search is painful. Okay? Verse 13. It says here in the text, it is a grievous task. ESV, it is an unhappy business. NIV, what a heavy burden that God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with. Let's pause. God has made you to think. He doesn't do that with animals. You know, how many of you have a dog at home? How many of you right now, your dog is thinking deep thoughts? Okay. And if you raise your hand, I'm just going to say, children's church, okay, is in the back. Okay. Now, so you don't know my dog, that's fine. Okay. God has made people to wonder, why am I here? Why do things happen the way they do? Can I point this out in verse 13? God has given the sons of men, what's interesting, many people point this out, the word men there is actually singular, sons of man. Who is that man? The word man is Adam. And it may be that Solomon is actually referring to the effects of the fall as we wrestle with life in a sin-cursed world. And we suffer. And it's hard. And we wonder, what's going on? God has given us this task. It's a God-given task to try to think through what's going on. He makes the point, the search is painful. Now, first of all, it is a God-given task. But second sub-point, it's rough. It's a burden. I want to show you that here in the text, okay? Notice what he says in verse 13 at the end. It's a grievous task which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with. Verse 14. I have seen all the works which have been done under the sun, right? He's investigating it. He's thinking deeply about it. And what does he conclude? Second half of verse 14. All is vanity. It's temporary. It's not satisfying. It's hard to understand. It's like, end of verse 14, striving after wind. It's like chasing the wind. You can try as hard as you can, but you never really get a grasp on it. You say, Solomon, what are you talking about? He says, all of the works, verse 14, that have been done under the sun, and in context, these are intellectual works. We're talking not about working with your hands and laying block and making a sidewalk. We're talking about thinking. And in context, trying to understand what are the answers to life's riddles. Verse 15, what is crooked cannot be straightened. There are some problems that simply can't be solved. And if you are honest with life, there are many times where people will say, explain to me why this happened. And the only answer is, I don't know. There are many things that are crooked, verse 15. They can't be straightened. And what is lacking cannot be counted. The fact of the matter is, there are many times we simply lack information. I'm not suggesting God's not working. God is always working, but we frequently have no idea what God is doing. And that's the way life goes. Verse 16. Solomon, I said to myself, behold, I have magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before me, and my mind has observed the wealth of wisdom and knowledge. Solomon is saying, I have the opportunity to think about this. Verse 17. And I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I realized that this also is striving after wind. Now look, notice verse 18. Because in much wisdom, there is much grief. And increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. How many of you are familiar with the word melancholy? Now, there's many different usages to that word. There's a traditional viewpoint. It's called the four classic temperaments, and I'm not a big personality type guy. But there's a way of thinking about people that says there's basically four types of people, and one of those four types, allegedly, is called the melancholic, or the melancholy person. What kind of a person is melancholic? He's thoughtful. He's a deep thinker. When other people giggle and laugh, he wonders why they're laughing. He wonders why people do what they do. You say, how is a melancholic person? Even if you're not familiar with that personality kind of thing, many of you, maybe most of you know the word melancholy means what? Sad. Maybe even depressed. Because that's a reality. Thought deeply thoughtful people are frequently not incredibly happy people. I'm not suggesting they're depressed. I'm just making the point that what Solomon is saying in verse 18 is true. In much wisdom, there is much grief. And increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. And if you're going to take the time to think deeply about life, it's painful. And that's what God says. Chapter 1, verses 12 through 18. Now, I try to think of pictures. You know, I like to illustrate things in a way that would help us to understand. You say, what does it look like to be thoughtful, to be thinking about the vanity of life? And I just went through pictures, and I came across a sports one, even though I wasn't really looking for it. Here's a classic picture. I wasn't familiar with it until I read about it. This is from September 1964. That quarterback from the New York Giants' name is Y.A. Tittle. I'm not familiar with him. He just got hit by the Steelers' John Baker. And here's the quarterback. He's now 38 years old. He's hurt and he's bloody. And he's old in this picture for football. He's 38 years old. His career is coming to an end. And here he is on the field thinking deeply, my career, and it's gone. He was the NFL MVP in previous years. But no more. And his life is slipping by him. And he knows his career soon ceases. And it does. And you look at this picture, especially if I could blow it up. Maybe I should have blown it up more. And you see the look in his eyes. And that's frequently what life is like. It's a painful thing to think deeply. You say, is that good? What do you think? Is that good? Now, this, I'm going to stay with the sports illustration. What's the other option? You can think deeply about life and struggle. Or you can be, now I'm going to use the word stereotypical, okay? So don't get mad at me. You can be a stereotypical cheerleader, right? Go team, go! Who doesn't even realize she has the sign upside down, right? You say, describe this cheerleader, two words. Cute and clueless. And a lot of people go through life that way, right? Yay, team, go team. And they think deep thought is too painful, right? So just give me another cookie and I'm fine. And we'll just smile our way cluelessly through life. Now, the reason I have these two pictures here is I'd like to ask the question, which is the better option? Solomon is making the point, God is revealing truth to us here in Ecclesiastes. What's the better option? Should you think deeply about the vanity of life, realizing it will bring you at times to very sad places? Or should you just kind of bebop your way through life, cute and clueless? Solomon says, if you take the time to actually search, you'll find it's profitable. And that's our second point. Number one, the search is painful. Chapter 1, verses 12 through 18. Point 2, but the search is profitable. And we're going to come back, Lord willing, to the first 11 verses in chapter 2. So now we're going to look, if you would turn with me, please, to chapter 2, and we'll pick it up in verse 12. And even in your English Bibles, you'll see most Bibles begin a new paragraph here. So we're still talking about this topic of wisdom, searching for wisdom, trying to understand through logic, philosophy, and even scientific inquiry. And what does Solomon say? Let's pick it up here in chapter 2, in verse 12. So I turned to consider wisdom, madness, and folly. The word consider, yet another verb. It means to observe, to examine, to inspect. It's like a scientist in his laboratory. And he goes on. For what will the man do who will come after the king except what has already been done? Let me give you a loose paragraph. Who can do any better than that? You can't do any better than this. I am a king, and I am wise, and I am focused on seeing if I can figure out life, and there's no one who can do any better. And you can't. Because who has more resources than Solomon? Who has more wisdom than Solomon? You say, okay, so Solomon, help me out. Verse 13. Here's what he says. And I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. Wisdom is better than foolishness. Solomon is saying it is worth investing the effort, even though it's going to bring you a lot of pain, to think deeply about life. Because verse 13, it's just like light excels darkness. If you're out at night and you don't know where there's danger, you use a light. Because there's things at night that are dangerous. Nancy and I sometimes will go for walks in the evening, and we'll leave, and the sun's still up, but we go for a little 3-mile walk, we come back, and sometimes the sun is setting, and it's kind of dark, and it could be dangerous because cars can't see us. So we carry a couple of little flashlights, and not really so much so that we can see, so that we can be seen, because in the dark, it's nice to have some light. Solomon says, verse 13, I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. Verse 14. I'll expand on that. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. If I could just summarize it this way. Is the search profitable? Is it worth the pain that it's going to bring you to think deeply about life? Solomon has an answer. And the answer is yes. So if I could go back to our previous two pictures, who's better off? Somebody who in despair is thinking about the fact, I think I'm too old to play this game anymore. I used to be an MVP, but whew, life has gone by me. I'm not sure what's coming next. Or, yay, go team. And you can see what, I don't use this word, but you can see what website this comes from. It's called stupidpeople.net. I don't use that word from the pulpit, moms and dads. Okay, just for the record. Okay, because once I used it, somebody said, hey, Greg, we tell our kids we don't use that word. Okay, so I did not use it. I was reading it off the slide. Okay. So Solomon is making the point that it's worth it. The search is profitable. So here we are reading through Ecclesiastes, and if I could just remember to paint the big picture. So what benefit is there under the sun of all of our labor? What is the use of being here? And Solomon is saying, I am going to try to figure that out by wisdom. Now, number one, be careful, the search is painful. But number two, the search is helpful. You say, okay. So, Greg, what I would expect to find next is spend the time, think deeply about life, and you will find success. That is what I would think if I was reading this book. Because if you encourage me with the possibility of success, I am willing to go on a journey. Illustration. I'm going to put up a quick picture here. It's a sketch. How many of you know what that refers to? Raise your hand. It's been all over the news for the last 3 weeks. There's a group of 12, if I'm thinking correctly, Thai soccer players, young boys, that went out having fun in a cave with their coach. And they went into this cave, and they're just having a good time, but the tide came in and filled the low points of the cave. These guys are stuck. All we know is there's a bunch of bicycles outside a cave. The kids must be in the cave. But where? Nobody knows. And so what happens? They start an incredible search. Is it going to be successful? No one knows. And 10 days, if I have my facts right, and I look down at my notes, 10 days later, a British diver comes out of a flooded area and sees a young boy who is the only one who speaks English, and he just looks at him and he says, "Hello." And the diver says, "Hello." Now, the work has just begun. Because how do you get... This is a Navy SEAL diver. He knows how to dive in water with zero visibility, channels so narrow your shoulders could barely fit through them, and he's not frightened. Guys, that's not me. Greg, would you go into a small, tiny cave without water? No. No. Okay? I don't know if that's claustrophobia. That's just reality. I'm not doing it. Okay? Lock me in a closet. I'm not happy. These guys do it underwater. How are you going to bring 12 kids out? And it's roughly 2.5 to 3 miles from here where the young men were all the way to there. Well, here's the point. They interviewed one of the leading divers. And it wasn't just British divers, but they did the most difficult parts of it because I guess they're just good. And one of the men, I don't know if it's the guy whose picture I actually have here, but one of the guys who was interviewed after the incident all took place, here's what he said. "I'm good at what I do. I was confident I could find them. I was confident I could get out alive because I'm trained to do that. I was confident I could get them out, but I didn't think I could bring them out alive. That would be too hard." And every one of us was discussing what is the acceptable number of casualties. Because to get 12 young boys who were going to panic out and have every one of them survive is too high of a goal. Our goal was to accept minimal casualties. And you say, what happened? Well, they sedated them, which was a good idea. They medicated them heavily so they don't know what's going on. And then they assigned 2 divers per child, one in front and one behind, so that if any diver at any time slips in any way, there's a second diver who's right there. And through a series of having masks on them, because at times they're underwater, and then stretchers and winching them, they finally got the children out, and all of them survived. And that was a story that captivated not only our country, but the whole world. It was like, yes, they got the boys out. And I remember reading that, and it was like, awesome. Okay, now here's my point. They didn't know if they could make it, but they tried. Here's my question. Here's what Solomon wants us to think about. Is there a possibility, if you will think deeply about life, that wisdom will bring you the answers? It's going to be painful, but it's helpful. Is there any possibility that it will give us the answers we long for? And the point is very clear. It's our third point. Number one, the search is painful. Number two, the search is profitable, and I would not have written the book this way. Number three, the search is guaranteed to fail. There is no one who will succeed in this search. If Solomon can't do it, I can't do it, and you can't do it. Let's let the scripture tell us that. Look at chapter 2, please, in verse 14. Yes, the wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yes, verse 13. I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. That's true. But notice, please, the second half of verse 14. And yet I know that one fate befalls them all. One fate befalls them all. You say, Solomon, what are you talking about? There are people that are wise. And they think deeply. And they ask good questions. And there are people who are foolish. And they go through life cute and clueless. And Solomon makes the point, when it all ends, it doesn't matter. Because the wise die just like the fool. You see that in the second half of verse 14? I know that one fate befalls them both. In this life, you're going to die either way. Simple illustration. I have here a picture of a cemetery. It's a large cemetery. There are many monuments there. Okay, I want to ask you a question. Look at those grave markers, those tombstones, and you tell me which ones represent people that were wise and which ones represent people that are fools. And every one of us would say, Greg, I don't know. I mean, how could you know? That's the point. You could spend your life thinking deeply about why do things happen the way they happen. You can have logic, incredible logic. You can be the most thoughtful person there is, and your grave will be right next to a fool, and you'll die the same way, and there's no difference. That's Solomon's point. The search for wisdom in this life, trying to answer the difficult questions that we struggle with, it will fail. Because first of all, the wise die like the fool, and notice what verse 15 says. Then I said to myself, as is the fate of the fool, it will also befall me. Why then have I been extremely wise? So I said to myself, this too is vanity. For, verse 16, there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool, and as much as in the coming day, all will be forgotten. And how the wise man and the fool alike die. Notice that phrase in the second last portion of verse 16. Inasmuch as in the coming days, all will be forgotten. The wise die like the fool. The wise are forgotten like the fool. Here's another picture of a cemetery. An overgrown cemetery. The kind of cemetery that is so old, nobody goes there anymore. And here are grave markers. Question. Which of these people were wise and which of these people were fools? And not only do you not know which is which, no one even knows who they are anymore. Because they're forgotten. Just like I'll be forgotten. Just like you'll be forgotten. And so notice what Solomon says in verse 17. So I hated life. For the work which had been done under the sun was grievous to me, because everything is futility and striving after wind. Now, in context, what work is he talking about? He's talking about intellectual work. He's talking about academic work. He's talking about thinking deeply about the hard questions of life. And it's painful, it's profitable. But when it's all said and done, it's still unsuccessful. I heard a pastor use an illustration that really clinched it for me, and so I'll borrow his illustration. Pretend there's a plane filled with people, and it's a very foggy day. It doesn't know it, but it's going right for a mountain. They're all going to die. It's going to crash. No one knows it because it's foggy. There's two people sitting right next to each other, okay? Here is a guy who has a PhD in philosophy, and he's reading Greek philosophers in the original classic Greek, okay? I mean, this guy is blessed intellectually. This guy thinks deep thoughts for fun. And here he is reading Greek. he looks over, and the guy next to him, his same age, is reading Batman. And he's wondering if Batman can beat Mr. Freeze. Yeah? You guys know Mr. Freeze? When I was young, I watched Batman, and there was Mr. Freeze. You say, give me somebody else. The Penguin. All right? Now, some of you might say, yeah, Greg, you're on my level. Okay. So here's a guy, intellectually brilliant, and he's looking at the Batman reading guy thinking, how simple. And they're on the plane, and all of a sudden it hits, and they die. And what's the difference? They meet the same fate, they experience the same end, and they're both forgotten just the same. Solomon says, so what use is it? I hated life. I despaired because if you are an intellectual type of person, you like to think, I'm going to do something so awesome, so incredible, my book will keep me in the minds of people. And Solomon is saying, no, it won't. It's just not that way. The fact of the matter, and here's the summary of the message tonight in one slide, human wisdom is not the answer to struggling with the vanity of life. Am I suggesting we all become cute and clueless? And at least one of those two. And the answer would be no. Ask hard questions and struggle. But Solomon wants you to understand that you're never going to find the answers. You say, Greg, give me answers. Remember, that's why we started with the conclusion. And I hope this sounds familiar. What is the conclusion? You're only here for a brief visit, guys, and it's gone. You say, so what do? Here's the conclusion, number one. Fear God and keep His commandments. When we come to the very end of Ecclesiastes, remember chapter 12, 13 through 14, the conclusion, when it's all been heard, no matter whether you're reading Batman or whether you're reading philosophy, the mountain you're going to hit is coming. So here's what you need to do. Fear God and keep His commandments. Because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it's good or evil. So that's what we need to understand, because Proverbs 9:10, if I could expand it, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. And if we don't fear God, we don't have a chance to begin at having true wisdom. And the smartest guy in the university will never get wisdom until he fears God, which is where we need to begin. So conclusion, number one, fear God and keep His commandments. And then number two, accept the reality that life is a vapor. And you're gone. And it's better to think about it than to go through life saying, yay, yay, go team. But actually pondering that my life is what? It's a breath. It's a mist. And what does that mean? Let's review that. It means that my life is what? My life is temporary. So live for that which is eternal. Guys, there's nothing in this temporary world worth living for. But it also means that life is frustrating. So trust God. And many, many times you might be thinking, so why did this happen? And biblically the answer is, I don't know. God knows. And then remember that it is unsatisfying. And as long as we look to things in this life for satisfaction, we'll continue to be disappointed, which is why we must look to Christ. So number one, fear God, keep His commandments. Number two, accept that life is a vapor. And then number three, enjoy this. Remember Hevel, that's our word vanity. Enjoy life. It's a gift. We're on the plane ride. It's going to hit. You can't stop it. Enjoy the ride. Realize that I'm only here for a little bit. And you say, Greg, but it's so frustrating. Now watch this. Greg, I have to understand what happens. I have to understand. I have to understand. Okay? Where do people like that end up? Substance abuse problems? Anxiety disorders? medication of all kinds. I must understand. That's one response to your vain life. But there's a better response. You know, Lord, I trust you. I don't understand, but I don't need to understand. You say, what is that called? Brothers and sisters in Christ, that's called faith. We don't walk by sight, we walk by faith. Why did this happen? I don't know. Why did that happen? I don't know. So what do you know? I know that God is awesome. And I fear Him. And He's given me a little of a life. And every time I try to figure it out, I don't find answers. And every time I look to it to satisfy me, I'm disappointed. Right? My family, my wife disappoints me, my kids disappoint me, my parents disappoint me, my brothers and sisters in Christ disappoint me, my work disappoints me, everything I do is disappointing, but there's one person who never disappoints me, and His name is Christ. And so I do what? I enjoy life. And Lord, thank you for life. And you say, and you're not uptight. Mm-mm. Why would I be uptight? Why would I have an anxiety disorder? That's not the way to go on your journey. This is a biblical philosophy of life. Fear God, accept that it's a vapor, and enjoy it as a gift. That's a biblical philosophy of life. Trying to figure it out is to embark on a journey that is profitable, but God promises it will not succeed. The only redeeming aspect of it is that it brings us to the end of ourselves and it points us to Christ. I hope Ecclesiastes is making sense for you. I hope it's doing more than that. I hope it's beginning to put down for you a biblical philosophy of life.